I regret him.
And Rolex, he's like...
It's beautiful. It's perfect. Welcome home, Luther, man. Your father's happy to see you.
Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book, manga, graphic literature, graphic novel, and everything in between podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew.
That's me, and yep, we are going to talk about one to some of those things today.
Yes, some of those things.
Or maybe curveball, none of those things.
Yeah. And there are definitely pictures involved.
Yes, there are.
None of which are like police lineup photos or anything like that.
I don't know. I'm tired, Rob. I'm so tired.
My brain just went off into a world where reading comic books was considered a crime.
I mean, I think it depends on the book.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the questions, though? Was this the man who was reading the comic book and then being on trial for reading, I don't know, Batman or something like that?
See, I feel like that could be a Brooklyn Nine-Nine bit where they have to do the lineup and like then Terry Crews has to get dressed up as like your traditional spotty nerd in glasses.
See, if they did that, I would pay to see Terry Crews just do that on stage in general.
But just the button-up shirt with his abs literally so hard pressed against it, there's just... You can see the outline like in a comic book.
Yeah, basically. You just look at him and you go, no, that outfit just doesn't fit with his body physique. But somehow he's managing to pull off the character of nerd.
Which he would, because Terry Crews is a talent.
Yes, he is. And a very rare and wonderful talent as well.
Hey, speaking of rare and wonderful talents...
Oh?
We can all apply that to Iron Fist, right?
Well, there's a rarity there, definitely.
Yes, thankfully so. So, it's the San Diego Comic-Con in about a month's time, which is traditionally when the big companies like to bowl out their new big exclusive movies and TV shows.
Okay.
And so what are Marvel doing? Is it the eagerly anticipated Avengers 4? Is it the equally easily anticipated Captain Marvel? It's not. It's Iron Fist. It's obviously Iron Fist. That was the point of the lead-in.
Okay, now, I'm a little confused here. Somewhere along the way, you said that it's Iron Fist and there is going to be no Captain Marvel and no Avengers 4?
Nope. Marvel Studios are pretty much going to be a no-show. Instead, it's going to be all about Marvel TV. With Iron Fist heading them up.
What? Why Iron Fist?
I don't know.
Surely you had better options like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And I know that's not a better option, but it's still better than Iron Fist.
Is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. still ongoing? I thought it ended.
I don't know. It's all gone weirdly metaphysical in my head now. The Marvel TV universe is just the thing that happens. And every so often I'm treated to things like The Punisher.
Yeah, which speaking of, apparently The Punisher Season 2 and Season 3 of Daredevil might also be making a showing, but why would you not make one of them their headline?
What? I mean, seriously, just put John Bernthal up front and just say, look, we've got The Punisher, we win, that's it, job done.
Yeah, that's like, it's not like they don't know... The reception to Iron Fist was less than stellar because they've booted Scott Buck, who was the original showrunner, and replaced him with Raven Metzner, who apparently was the showrunner for Sleepy Hollow, the one with the Headless Horseman.
And Sleepy Hollow
looks not good.
Sleepy Hollow, as in the TV series that didn't really get received that well and faded into obscurity because it had a much better movie adaptation that just so happened to have Johnny Depp and Christopher Walken in.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, but this was before he started getting really, really, really annoying. And before he started playing every role as if he was Jack Sparrow, including Johnny Depp.
So weird. That's not a good, like, central point for your big announcement of going, hey, look, we tried to fix this thing that you hate.
So they gave it to the person who ran Sleepy Hollow. I've just realised the person who actually ran the town of Sleepy Hollow was a bit like the mayor of that town in The Wicker Man. You know, the one who actually let all these things happen in the first place.
God, Christopher Lee should be the Iron Fist showrunner.
Or at least somebody, choose somebody who's got some understanding of, like, martial arts. Be the showrunner. I mean, hell, I'm sure that some of the Hong Kong actors put Donnie Yen in charge, you know? Donnie Yen would be good.
Also, maybe fire Finn Jones and just make Donnie Yen be Danny Rand.
Yeah, but then, you know, no, what am I complaining about? Do it.
Like, there's literally no valid complaint for Donnie Yen not being in everything ever.
Well, he was the best thing in Rogue One by a long way. I mean, he was basically a Jedi. Why not make him a full proper Jedi?
Because he don't need no Force. He's got his faith and he's got his hitting stick.
Can you imagine, though, if he met a Jedi, he was like, you're not as impressive as I thought you were going to be. It would be hilarious.
I'm quite disappointed that didn't happen now.
Yeah, I know, because that would have just been amazing. I mean, the only Jedi I can think of who would make Donnie Yen go, yeah, good, I like you now, is Mace Windu, because it's Samuel L. Jackson.
I can see him getting on with Yoda as well, though.
Yeah, I can see him getting on with Yoda, but every other Jedi, Donnie Yen would just look at them and go, yeah, right, you're not a Jedi.
And it works doubly well, because in that film he's blind.
Exactly.
I think it might actually be one of my favourite movie jokes. Just the bit where someone shoves a bag over his head. Yeah. And you just get that beat. And then they're just like, but I'm blind.
It was good, though. It reminds me of, you know, that bit in Avatar where Sokka and Toph and them, it's right at the end of the first of The Legend of Aang. And Sokka says to Toph, right, you control the ship, we'll go do this. And she goes, yeah, that's right. Let the blind girl steer.
Toph and Donnie Yen from Rogue One. I don't actually remember what Donnie Yen's name in Rogue One was. Let's call him Donnie Yen throughout that film.
We call him Donnie Yen
in
every...
Toph should team up. Yeah, that would be, like, the best thing ever.
We call him Donnie Yen in everything because that's what he is. He is, like, the ultimate form of Donnie Yen. I know that sounds weird, but will understand what I'm talking about there, Andrew.
Yeah, Donnie Yen is just a quantum singularity.
Exactly.
He exists across every universe as Donnie Yen.
You know that movie that Jet Li did, The One? He was actually making a film about Donnie Yen.
Well, no, he wouldn't, because I feel like all the Donnie Yens would get on really well with each other.
No, they'd get on so well, they'd just merge into one being, they wouldn't need to kill each other off.
I'd watch a room full of Donnie Yens just sitting around drinking tea.
yeah, we are actually a comic book podcast, I should tell you. I just want to remind people that we are actually a comic book podcast.
Yeah. So speaking of things almost related to TV, to comic books, Lucifer, that other comic TV show that we don't really watch, apparently that's been saved from cancellation by Netflix.
I'll be honest, I didn't mind Lucifer as much as Iron Fist annoyed me after a bit.
Oh yeah, no, like, despite what I said in that opening, I think Lucifer... it's a perfectly good TV show.
It's very solid. I mean, I don't know. How do you rate it in comparison with something like Preacher?
Oh, that would put it much higher than Preacher, because season 2 of Preacher was absolute doo-doo.
Exactly. Whereas the first 3 seasons of Lucifer have been pretty solid. And
see, I've got to admit, I've only watched like a season and a half of Lucifer. I think my problem, it's not that it does anything wrong. It's just that there's plenty of other things that I like better, and I only have so much time.
Yeah, exactly. In the first, I managed to make it through the first 3 seasons, and it was better than I thought. It was a lot more melodramatic than I really wanted it to be. I just wanted it to just kind of, you know, let's just move on with the story. Tom Ellis is great. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, Tom. Like that is 90% of why Lucifer is a good show.
Yeah.
It's just Tom Ellis is delightful.
Yeah. He's brilliant. He's charming. He's despicable. He's diabolical. But he's delicious with it all as well. So, yeah.
Delicious was not the word I thought you were going to go for, but that it fits.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know that show has fans, and, you know, it's cool for them.
Thing is, it's another one of those shows where it's actually better than the Fox executives actually think it is, and it's got the fans to kind of back it up, but it still gets cancelled in it, you know, after its third season. And Fox have a history of doing this as well.
But of course, Rob, we need to make room in the schedule, because otherwise how can we have The Big Bang Theory and Young Sheldon?
Don't remind me.
It's whenever I see that, I feel a certain affinity for the Red Lanterns, because I too feel like I can just vomit out acidic rage.
Yep.
And hey, speaking of DC characters,
it's
a flawless segue, Rob. We have some new details about the DC Universe streaming service that is going to be coming in late August.
Okay.
So this is basically a DC streaming service, which is going to give you access to digital movies and TV shows. I know that's where the new series of Young Justice is going to be appearing, which is rad.
Mm.
And also, finally, they're doing an online comic subscription service like Marvel Unlimited.
Oh, wow. It just took them how long?
Well, I think the thing that DC have kind of historically proven is they just hate money.
See, this is the thing. I don't understand why they hate money so much. I like money, you know. I don't have enough of it, but I like it. And I wish I could spend more time with money. You know, I'd take money out. We'd go to the park. We'd go to restaurants. We got pubs and clubs. We'd go shopping, you know.
I mean, look, the thing is, I like money. But what I think I like more than money is being able to hand money over for things that I like. Like, say, access to a near unlimited number of comics.
But this is the thing, you know. If money was truly your friend, then money would automatically give you these things.
DC was my friend. They'd have just given me online comics ages ago.
True. This is very, very true.
But yeah, that I'm quite hopeful. I mean, obviously, the one thing to be wary of at the moment, all we really have detail-wise, is them saying a lot of comics.
Yeah, a lot is not really a good descriptive term here.
Yeah, this is Danny Snow saying this, who will be the community manager of the service.
I mean, when you say a lot of comics, are you saying all comics, all the way up to and including the Golden Age or Silver Age? Are we talking like back to the 1980s, or are we talking back to the noughties?
Yeah, I mean, I think my main worry is it's going to end up being just kind of going back a few years, like maybe to the new 52.
Oh, God, please don't.
Which is, I mean, I think there's probably still some good stuff that came out of that, and it would be cool to read.
Yeah. I'll be honest, the majority of the new 52 stuff I wasn't really a fan of.
I mean, but what I really want is just the ability to read my Suicide Squad comics somewhere where I don't have to worry about them crumbling to dust every time I open them.
That's a fair point. Also, you don't have to worry about people walking up to you and going, oh, you're a Harley Quinn fan, just because you're reading Suicide Squad.
Not that Suicide Squad, Rob. Not that Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Never that Suicide Squad.
Andrew, you know that would happen. They'd just look at the title and see Suicide Squad.
Yes. And then the red glow would start coming from the ring around my finger. And out comes the rage vomit.
This is an old reference, right? But when you say stuff like that, it makes me think of an old Abbott and Costello sketch from one of their films. It has to do with Niagara Falls and this guy who basically killed his wife whenever he hears the word Niagara Falls, he goes, Niagara Falls! Slowly I turn. And then he's talking about how he killed somebody.
I vaguely remember that sketch.
I've got to hand it to Abbott Costello. They had some great comedy timing, and that was one of my favourites because they kept saying Niagara Falls because they were visiting Niagara Falls, and this guy just happened to be there and kept beating the crap out the short guy. I can't remember which one he was. Was it Abbott or Costello? No, it was Costello because his phrase was, hey, Abbott, wasn't it?
I don't know. I'm far from an Abbott and Costello expert.
So am I. Very far. I know the Who's On First sketch, and that's about it.
All I know is that there's lots of comics in DC's back catalogue that I would quite like to read, but not so much that I want to hunt down a fairly expensive graphic novel.
Yeah, there is that. Anyway, what's next?
Next up, we have got another little side bit about DC that there's going to be a character finally introduced into the DC canon.
Oh?
A beloved character who made his debut in a movie many, many years ago.
Oh, please, say the Nuclear Man. Say the Nuclear Man.
It's the Nuclear Man, Rob.
The Nuclear...
It's actually... Your ridiculous suggestion was actually right for once.
You're kidding. They're actually going to make the Nuclear Man is going to be canon.
Yeah, and first debuted in Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Yeah. So, the Nuclear Man is going to be canon in DC, finally, even though Marvel basically stole the idea and turned him into Hyperion.
Yeah, you ruined that character for me, Rob. Because his costume is just the Nuclear Man's costume.
It is, isn't it?
But yeah, I think there's only one appropriate response to this news. That's your Bendis.
So I've got to ask, is this like a joke thing, or is it like just Bendis has decided, right, I'm going to make it a thing. I'm going to work it in somehow. The Nuclear Man is going to be a thing. He's going to be a big Superman villain.
I mean, the thing with Bendis is it could easily be either.
This is the thing.
Yeah, basically, this whole thing kicked off because the artist, Nick Darrington, he did a sketch of the Nuclear Man when Bendis was first announced as the new Superman writer.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that picture actually makes him look pretty cool. I mean, you know, as cool as the Nuclear Man can be.
So, what was the artist called?
Nick Darrington.
I'm trying to find that picture. Nick Darrington, Nuclear.
If only I had shared some kind of news story that contained said picture.
Yeah, unfortunately, me and my wisdom closed things, didn't I?
Yeah, that's about par for the course.
Wisdom, it's a great thing. You should use it more. Aha. Aha. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And is that the Nick Darrington sketch, or is that... Because he says it's Ivan Rice?
Oh, yes. No. Okay, so it was Nick Darrington who did the original sketch, but the art we're seeing is Ivan Rice, who will be doing the art in the Superman issue, where he's actually going to appear.
See, I like that. That is... I mean, that... It's even got the nails. He's even got the nails.
He's so glam rock.
Got the nails. Because that was the thing, you know. I remember the Quest for Peace when suddenly the Nuclear Man's nails got longer and he scratches Superman. You're like, what kind of a fight is this?
A catty one. That's what kind of a fight.
And then 30 years later, you've got Wolverine just going, yeah, these are better.
Okay, but Wolverine can't just, like, file his claws in a sassy manner.
This is true.
But here's the question, Rob.
Yeah?
What with the Nuclear Man's nails, do you think he can make them real hot?
Oh, that was that. Sorry. Yeah.
That's how hot the claws are. those sick beats just got to start playing.
Stupid autoplay. Go away.
Anyway, speaking of things that are stupid, how about a stupid amount of money?
Yes, please.
So, the bidding war for Fox's assets, including the X-Men and Fantastic Four movie rights, has been heating up.
Wasn't it? Comcast was currently the front runner with like 60-something billion.
Yeah, they were. Disney has now put a bid in for $71.3 billion.
Wow.
That's...
The thing that confuses me is I can understand Disney wanting to buy Fox, right? That makes a lot of sense. There are a lot of Fox properties that Disney could do really well with. And obviously, connecting the Marvel Universe, you know, all the Marvel characters back together would be a great, it'd be a great thing for fans, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
What I don't understand is, obviously, I can understand from the financial perspective, Comcast wanting to get their piece of the pie. But,
yeah, I assume Comcast are probably more interested in a bunch of other Fox properties, but also I probably see that superheroes are a lucrative market and want to invest in that. And oh no, there's a wasp. There's a wasp right outside the window. Don't come in, wasp. Don't come in. Yes, that's what we're doing. Remember, Rob, they smell fear.
So anyway,
yeah. $71.3 billion, Rob.
That buys you a lot of comics.
that's literally an amount of money that I can't even conceive of.
See, couldn't you just go and buy DC for that?
I mean, I guess not.
I reckon you could. I mean, this is Fox that they try. I mean, it's the majority of Fox that they're trying to buy, isn't it? And last time I looked, Fox was worth more than DC.
But DC are also owned by Warner Brothers.
Ah, true.
Who? I mean, I say they don't want to give away the rights.
Well.
But maybe someone should just go to them and just say, it's all right.
You can let go of this now.
Clearly, making a DC film is not something you're good at.
It's all right now.
It shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah, it's safe now. You can let go of it now. Don't worry. We'll buy you a new blanket. It's okay.
But what if we make a third Joker film?
It's okay. We'll handle the fallout of all of this. You can just relax. Just go back to bed. Just go back to bed. It's all a dream.
Oh, actually, in other movie news.
Oh.
I've got some more DC fun. So, you know the Batman movie that may or may not be happening and may or may not star Ben Affleck, who also may or may not be directing the film?
Oh, you mean Schrodinger's Batman starring Schrodinger's Ben Affleck?
Yes. Now, it also may or may not be in the same continuity as the Joker film that may or may not be getting made and could but might not star Joaquin Phoenix and also maybe, but also who knows, star Robert De Niro.
Okay, there's I need some red string and a wall to figure out the last bit of that. So,
actually, we know that all large corporations are essentially evil. Are Warner Brothers just trying to create some kind of quantum singularity that will destroy the universe?
Or maybe this is a code. Maybe this is like one of those stupid Dan Brown novels where it's some kind of code written in comic book speak.
I just hope this whole thing is an elaborate ruse and actually they're making a Phantom Stranger movie.
Okay, now how would that go?
I don't know, but the Phantom Stranger's whole thing is that no one knows his real origin.
I know. I mean, the only thing that would be more bizarre... I suppose the Spectre would be pretty straightforward unless you went with the cosmic version of the Spectre, because that's when it really gets weird. And normally the Spectre, you know, being the spirit of vengeance and everything, it's just like Ghost Rider going around.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah?
So he's the Spectre, but he's running around doing things in the cosmos.
Yes.
So are you saying he's like some kind of space ghost?
He is a bit like Space Ghost, only way more powerful.
I want the Spectre to have his own talk show now.
No, because I know how that's going to go. They're going to go, it would literally be like Judge Judy, but starring...
Except if Judge Judy could, like, turn a guy into a block of cheese and then summon a horde of rats to eat him.
Yeah. It would be like that. It'd be like, what's his name? Could you call him Judge Spectre? Or could we make a pun out of it and go, you know, the new courtroom series, The Spectre, starring in Spectre.
That's bad, Rob.
I know.
You deserve to be turned into a candle and burnt to death.
But yeah, I mean... when he goes cosmic, he can do things like link hands with the Living Tribunal and form the Amalgam Age of Comics.
God, is that how that happened?
Yeah, because the Celestials, who were brothers, basically had a fight, and so in order to maintain the balance of both universes, Living Tribunal and Spectre shared the power between the two of them and merged what remained of both realities into one reality. And I remember this because I remember the rather nice artwork they did of Spectre and Living Tribunal reaching out across dimensions and linking hands together.
You know, Marvel and DC, you could just say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we just merged a bunch of our heroes together? People still would have bought it.
Yeah. Speaking of merging...
Yeah, good enough, I'll allow it.
Okay. You know that we sometimes get rather odd crossovers that really kind of don't make sense?
Yeah, we do.
And you know how DC have a lot of them?
That is one of their, like, weird niches.
I don't know why it's a niche, DC. You need to explain this to us. But anyway, IDW seem like they're getting in on the party. Now, IDW have some weird ones involving Star Trek and other properties. But this one is probably the most bizarre Star Trek crossover I've seen, because it's Star Trek and the Transformers.
I mean, okay. I just feel like that's missing a trick, because Star Trek aren't really, like, known for their vehicles beyond, like, big, massive spaceships, are they?
Exactly. And how are you going to get Optimus Prime on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise?
Well, I assume what's going to happen is that Kirk and the Autobots, they're going to team up to make sure that the Decepticons don't interfere with the development of any native species of a planet, because freedom of the right of all is the right of all sentient beings. And that is the Optimus Prime directive. Boom!
Oh, you were working on that joke for ages, weren't you?
As soon as you put it in Facebook.
But yeah, it seems like it's going to be Kirk and the Autobots. Well, Kirk and the rest of his crew and the Autobots versus Megatron and the Decepticons and what look like the Romulans. And that, or it's a bad, it's a really bad cover band for Boney M. I've just made an old joke and Andrew probably doesn't understand it.
No, I know. I'm just trying to work in like Romul sputin.
Raw, raw, Romulan. You don't need to go Rasputin. You can just go Romulan. Same number of syllables as well. But then you've got to do the rest of the song.
If season 2 of Star Trek Discovery has the Romulans just like Russian dancing their way into every scene, I am back on board with that show.
I would be fine with us. I would totally be fine with this. Bizarre, yes. Will I read it? Most definitely. You can't stop me.
Sure, it'll probably be fun.
I mean, it's got Kirk, and it's got,
is Kirk trying to sleep upon the Transformers? He is, isn't he?
You know it's going to happen.
I know it's going to happen, Rob, but I don't want it to.
Yeah, shall we take a break there?
I don't see why not.
I'm Christopher Sabat, voice of Alex Louis Armstrong, the Strong Arm Alchemist. And you're listening to The Geek Show, which has been passed down the Armstrong line for a generation or two.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out The Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week and do it reasonably well.
All of our previous episodes are available on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts, whichever podcast provider you use. They're also available on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll also find all of our other shows, reviews of various things, our shop, The Geek Shop, which has some very nice things as well, which you can buy to support us, or you can support us direct by using our Patreon. You'll find the link on our website. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook and other social media, or contact us on Twitter, which is
at 4PanelPodcast. I was ready to do it and then I forgot.
Or you can contact us direct by using our email address, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there. And to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop and buy some of our lovely wares. Buy them all.
Welcome back, and now it's time for comics and all that other goodness, and leading us into this wonderland is Andrew.
Yep, so first up, I have gone back to Totally Awesome Hulk, but it's now called The Incredible Hulk.
Whoa, hang on, I thought The Incredible Hulk was the She-Hulk one that was now the Hulk, Incredible Hulk.
No, I think that's just Hulk. And then I think it went back to being She-Hulk.
Okay.
Marvel comic names are a nightmare. Like, I think, was it Other Rob we were trying to explain it to, how it was like Rocket Raccoon and then just Rocket. And then, like, no, it was Rocket Raccoon, Rocket and Groot, then Rocket. Actually, no, I think then it might have been Rocket Raccoon again, then it was Rocket. It's madness, Rob. Absolute madness.
I'm just trying to figure out how to process things.
Anyway, you don't need to process that. What you do need to process is Return to Planet Hulk, which is written by Greg Pak, with what I will generously call art by Greg Land. So, Return to Planet Hulk sees Amadeus Cho, who is still the Hulk, returning to Planet Hulk, a.k.a. Sakaar. You know, which coincidentally was featured in that big old Thor movie that they had a while ago.
Yeah, yes it was. Was this Sakaar with the Grandmaster? And did the Grandmaster look a bit like a certain actor that we all know and love?
No, they weren't quite that blatant. Instead, this is Amadeus Cho. He's just chilling about in a space station when he gets a distress signal from the planet Sakaar, and he decides to go to their aid. I kind of like the idea that he really wants to save them because they're a planet that sees the Hulk as a hero. And that kind of ties into his whole ethos of proving that the Hulk isn't just a monster to be afraid of. Unless you're reading Immortal Hulk, in which case the Hulk definitely is a monster to be afraid of.
Yeah.
So Amadeus, he gets back to Sakaar by going through some wormhole. And he meets a bunch of the denizens who reveal that basically since the Hulk basically abandoned that planet to go back to Earth, things have gone rapidly downhill.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
Sorry, so Planet Hulk, Sakaar is the planet where Hulk was basically Conan.
Yes, where he basically got exiled to that planet, forced to compete in some gladiatorial games, and ended up overthrowing the king of that planet and becoming its new ruler.
So basically Conan.
Yeah, basically Conan. Invaded Earth, but then he got beaten, and I guess he just forgot all about Sakaar.
As you do. Didn't he end up getting married to that lassie on Sakaar, though?
Yeah, but then she died, as they want to do.
Ah, I remember now, which led to the whole, invasion of Earth thing.
Yeah, so I'm sure Hulk's wife is still floating around in a fridge somewhere.
But I'm sure they had a kid, didn't they? Son of Hulk is a thing, isn't he?
Yep, and he's probably somewhere. I don't know. So anyway, Sakaar has basically reverted back to the way things were before the Hulk first got there. Like, the people live in poverty, although it's now much more Mad Max-esque. There's people driving around in, like, big trucks and bikes covered in spikes and whatnot.
Okay.
And basically they find that, basically in the power vacuum left by the Hulk's running off, a new leader who is inventively called the Warlord has taken over and reinstated the whole gladiatorial games thing.
So the Thunderdome is back, is it?
Yes. Basically, when I say this book is called Return to Planet Hulk, this is literally Planet Hulk, but again.
Right.
And I think that's my big problem with this book, because I feel like it shouldn't be Amadeus Cho doing this.
No.
Like, if it was Bruce Banner going back, I think there'd be a much more interesting story about him realizing that, you know, he can't just run off and leave people to sort out their own stuff when he's, you know, taking this role as a ruler.
Yeah.
Like, it might be great to see him grapple with, like, he wants to go back to Earth, but he's also got a duty to help these people.
See, that I like. I like that idea because that's a situation that Hulk has never actually been placed in. When you think about it, it isn't, is it? Hulk's
yeah,
never...
Yeah, one where, like, he has to actually grapple with a big moral problem.
Yeah, and have the lives of all these people in the palm of his hand. You know, he decides who lives and who dies. He's never had the weight of that responsibility. Hulk has always been able to run away.
Yeah, but instead this is just Amadeus Cho doing the whole, oh, I've got to fight all these bad guys and then, you know, kill the Warlord. And there's even a same bit where he discovers that one of his allies has been mind-controlled into having to fight him in an arena battle just like the original Planet Hulk.
Oh, God.
But instead of the Silver Surfer, guess who it is, Rob?
No, it was Beta Ray Bill in Planet Hulk, wasn't it?
In the movie, like, yeah, the animated movie that they did, it was Beta Ray Bill.
Ah, yes.
But in the comic, it was the Silver Surfer.
Yes, it was, yes, it was.
But guess who it is this time, Rob? Bearing in mind the importance of corporate synergy.
Oh, God, it's not Thor, is it?
It's absolutely Thor.
Hang on, female Thor, Jane Foster?
No, dude Thor, with his naked chest and his metal arm and his axe.
Oh, right, Odin's son, Thor, person.
Yeah. So it is literally Thor with short hair and without Mjolnir having to fight the Hulk in an arena battle.
So basically bare-chested Thor is attacking Hulk with his nipples.
I mean, to be fair, I guess I thought he was just swinging his axe back, but Maybe he was going in nipples first.
And the reason why I say that is I hope people who draw comics and who write comics over at Marvel listen to this and just understand this is how some of us view their work. You know, if you're going to send a warrior into battle, maybe give him some armor.
Also, her some armor. See, like, all the female characters.
Yes.
Just let Angela wear some trousers, for God's sakes.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Valkyrie in Thor Ragnarok, in the movie, had armor that actually worked. You look at it and you go, yeah, it's, you know, it's sexy, but it's definitely protective as well.
You know, I was going to say comic Valkyrie was always pretty well armored, but then I remembered that armor included boob cups.
Yes. So anyway...
Comics are bad sometimes.
Yes, they are. So anyway, returning to Planet Hulk.
Yeah, it's just, it's a bit of a nothing story. I mean, I think the point of it is it's basically Amadeus kind of debating, does he give in to the Hulk and kind of, you know, go full rage monster? Because that might be the only way to save this world. Or does he hold on to his humanity? Which is, you know, that's the Hulk 101.
There's something I've noticed a little bit different about Amadeus Cho's Hulk, is that Amadeus Cho's Hulk is kind of like a more malevolent version of Banner's 90s Hulk.
Yeah, he's basically smart but mean.
Yeah, he is like Banner's 90s Hulk though, isn't he? In that he's articulate, he's smart, he can, you know, he can do sums and stuff like that, and he can think his way through problems. He's just a lot more blunt about solving problems.
Well, I mean, I guess like, because he's more like on a spectrum, isn't he? So that's Amadeus still in control, but maybe giving in to some of his worst impulses. Well, I think like the end of that is the Hulk that just wants to smash the crap out of everything.
Yeah, true. Sometimes smashy-smashy is the best way to go, though.
Yeah, I guess. It's just,
Well, you know, people say put the fear of God in them, but, you know, which one's scarier, Hulk or God?
I mean, look, I'm probably going to say God, to be honest. But yeah, I think it's just the whole Amadeus is the Hulk. I feel like it's been this exact same debate since the very first issue, and it just never really seemed to go anywhere that much, which I think is why I kind of stopped reading it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked what they were doing with Jennifer when she took over as the main Hulk, but she had the PTSD to deal with, and she was just trying to normalize her life so she could find a way to cope. And she was coming back from basically being deaded by Thanos, you know, which will cause all sorts of trauma, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that was a much better book. Also had better art.
Yeah.
But like Greg Land's art, in which everyone is just posed super awkwardly and has bad porn faces.
Is he the type of artist who draws everyone in a catalog model pose?
Oh no, Rob. Don't you know about Greg Land, who famously doesn't so much draw as he just traces things, and traces things specifically from pornography?
Oh, that guy. Yeah, that guy. I didn't know it was Greg Land.
It's just, I hate his art so much, because everything just looks so weird and plastic and posed.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, that's Return to Planet Hulk. It is not good. I was so far as to say it didn't really rock me, Amadeus.
Okay.
That's what it was leading to. You can have a turn now.
Yes. Anyway, right. I'm going to go with the first of my two oddities. And I have two oddities today. The first one is Enough Space for Everyone, which is a comic anthology which features stories by a variety of people, like Alice Gow, Anna Landon, Benito Torino, Caitlin Major, and lots of other people whose names I am not going to mention because there are a lot of them. It's edited.
I mean, I guess if it didn't feature a bunch of stories from a lot of people, it wouldn't be much of an anthology, would it?
No, it wouldn't, but there are a lot of names here. And if you want me to spend 5 minutes naming them all, then I will. To make you happy.
We'll see how we're doing for time.
Okay, we may come back to this. But anyway, it's edited by J.N. Monk and Lee Black. And I have to say, I am actually quite surprised that, okay, with any anthology, you're going to get some good ones and you're going to get some bad ones. Yeah?
Yep, that is usually the way it goes.
But I've got to say, with me being a sci-fi nerd, I actually quite like this, and I'm more, you know, I was more at peace with the ones that were just kind of meh. I didn't find them particularly bad. I mean, they're, a lot of the art styles are very simplistic and cartoony. You know, you're not looking at anything that's remarkably detailed. There are some ones that have, some stories that have more, you know, that go for a more detailed look. Some of them go for looks that are a lot, that place more emphasis on black and white, you know, on the stark contrast between black and white, things like that. But, you know, for the most part, this is actually an interesting book. It's got some very interesting ideas that it puts forward in a lot of the stories. One of them, there are some great stories in here. One of them is about a woman whose daughter loses her toy, which is called Tabby. It's basically an alien creature toy with like multiple arms and stuff like that. And so you have this delightful little thing where they're going around trying to find this toy, a version of this toy for her daughter. You got another one about a guy who goes on this tour around an alien planet, has an accident, and has to have alien organs implanted into him. So now he can only eat alien food, and he's trying to find...
Yeah, that's what they all say. No, honestly, darling, I just needed this alien organ in me to survive.
Well, the thing is, he can... You're a bad man. I'm trying real hard to ignore what you just said. You bad, bad man. So anyway, he's finding it hard to fit in back on Earth because he can't handle Earth food anymore, and the alien food is really expensive. So he moves back to the planet, and he's finding it hard to fit in there. You know, he needs to get a job, things like that. And so, yeah, he eventually manages to fit in. I think my favorite story out of all of them, there are a couple of them that really stood out for me. Let's just see if I can find the first one. The first one is, it's only a couple of pages long, right? It literally is only a couple of pages. Yeah, the first story that I like is called Misaligned, and you've got this kind of four-armed Cthulhu-type character, right, who's wearing goggles, and he's wearing a science suit with rubber gloves, and he's basically doing things like tweaking stars while listening to the radio and things like that, and he's aligning the stars into all of these different pictures, right? And he's created this wonderful scenery in the night sky of just this idyllic countryside with windmills and little birds flying and people having fun by the river and a guy relaxing. It's all beautiful, right? And it's in the night sky. And if you use your imagination, you can see it. Until that is one of the planets in a little flask. And he hears the voice from the planet. And from the planet, he hears a child saying to his parent, "I really like that constellation. It looks like a cat." He looks at it, and it's actually in the shape of a flower. That one's a house. It's actually a bird. A knight. It's actually a dog. A refrigerator. It's a house. And so this Cthulhu-type guy is just kind of really sad. And so the parent says, "Oh, no, honey. You're very creative, but those stars are actually form a picture." He's like, "Yes, maybe someone's seen my work of art." Only for the parent to say, "It's the battlefield of the gods, an endless pit of chaos."
I like that.
And so...
This sounds good. I might have to borrow it from you.
Yeah, Science Cthulhu is obviously a little bit upset about that. Another one of my standout ones. I mean, that one was only a couple of pages long, but it was delightful. Another one of my standout ones is just... you have this one called All to Myself. And it starts off with a woman in a spacesuit going, "Space. An infinite and vast canvas is spread out in front of me, an endless potential for exploration, near and far, small and big, planets and galaxies. I can go wherever I want to, and I can do whatever I please. In space, I have freedom, and I have power. I have it all to myself." And she, at that point, she's basically flying on her back towards whatever, only for the next scene, the next panel, to be her waking up because she's ran into a fat guy's gut at the pool.
Oh, that actually does tickle me.
It's superb. I mean, it's only three pages, but that made me laugh so much, that one. But I think the best one has to be Charlotte Thunder on the planet Sycorax. And it's just, you know... It's
That's a very good name already.
Well, the story is just called Charlotte Thunder. And it's written by Benito Cirino with art by Kristen Goodsnook. And it has the titular Charlotte Thunder flying to the planet Sycorax on her flying intergalactic Diplodocus.
Excellent.
Who goes by the name Thunderbird and wears a space helmet and a saddle and an oxygen tank. And that's basically it. Anyway, Charlotte Thunder lands on the planet and she's there to basically rescue this Duke and his daughter. His daughter just happens to be a huge fan of Charlotte Thunder and is reading a book called The Propriety of Angels, which is a Boo Block Times bestseller. And it is basically a period romance in the style of the Brontes and, you know, Jane Austen and that. And then the last page is just, this makes it for me. Because what this is, actually, and what Charlotte is, Charlotte Thunder is actually one of the three Thunder sisters, I'm assuming.
Yep.
And while she's writing her book, she gets called by her sister Anne, and says, I'm working. And Anne says, you have your other job to do. And apparently men from Mars have stolen the crown jewels, and Her Majesty would like you to get them back. So she has to run away from from working on her book that she is writing in Cthulhu ink.
But yeah, that sounds nonsense, Fruit Loops, and I like it.
Yeah, it's delightful, isn't it?
It is. It gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling inside.
And there are some kind of text-only bits in there, you know, but it is an anthology. It's made up of all sorts of different things, and I like the fact that it is. It's a bit like, you remember The Dark North that we did ages ago?
Oh, yes.
It's a bit like that, only a lot more whimsical. And there's
actually, that means it did. Did we do that on this show? I think it might have been
I think it was Literary Loitering we did that one on. I decided to do this one on 4-panel because it is fundamentally a graphic novel collection, a collection of comic books rather than a collection of stories written text-only and in the long form. So,
also, our whims are capricious and beyond your mortal ken, foolish listener.
Yeah. And there's a wonderful story about a little girl who basically she's trying to get away from all this stuff and she's suspicious of everybody. And basically, when the guy eventually manages to get her to sleep, you understand why they've been trying to get her to sleep by the end of it. And you're like, wow, that's pretty deep.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to have to take this off you.
So I was surprised at how much I actually enjoyed it.
Oh, that's always good when you find something that's good.
Yes. Anyway,
that was a deep and insightful thing that I just said.
Yes, yes it was. Over to you.
Yep, so I have also been reading another Marvel book, Spirits of Vengeance, War at the Gates of Hell, which is written by Victor Gishler with art by David Baldeon. And this is... See, I don't know why it's called Spirits of Vengeance when it's very clearly like a modern-day version of the Midnight Suns. You've got Damon Hellstrom, Saturna, Ghost Rider and Blade, and they have to stop a wizard named Necrodamus from using the 30 pieces of Judas's silver to basically make an attack on a covenant between heaven and hell that happens every 1,000 years and killing all the angels.
Wow. All of the angels.
I mean, enough of the angels. So yeah, I'm not so sure how I feel about this book. It's like, I don't really like the plot that much because it's one of those generic, we have to stop the bad man with the mystical artifact or he'll kill all the angels and war against heaven and hell.
Yeah.
And it also does a lot of stuff of like trying to be clever by referring to it in like modern day military terms. So like calling the place where they meet, you know, a DMZ. And explaining that it's like a hostage negotiation thing. I just feel like a lot of that doesn't really land. It feels quite forced.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, I like the characters involved.
Well, what's not to like? It's Zatanna. Is this Zatanna? Not Zatanna.
That's Zatanna, the daughter of Satan.
Yeah. Zatanna.
Who I like because she's basically. Like, she. Her main motivation for helping good guys is just because she's kind of bored.
Yeah. And it's Satana, Damien Hallstrom, Blade.
Yeah, who's... I mean, admittedly, he looks good in a suit. And yeah, but Blade and Ghost... Like, I really like Blade and Ghost Rider. And pretty much any book is something... Just having them in it makes it about, like, 40% better in my eyes.
Cool.
And also, I like it because Ghost Rider and Blade have, like, a very clear work-friends dynamic. Like, they will meet up and they will just have some fun casual banter. Like, they'll make some dumb jokes. Johnny will tell Blade about the good coffee place that he likes.
Wow.
That's just, it's a really fun relationship.
Hmm.
But like, guys, he is basically always at 11.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
Like, everyone is kind of, you know, making some light-hearted, standard battle banter. Yeah, battle banter. Meanwhile, Ghost Rider's riding around screaming, like, feel the flames of vengeance. I think yeah, one of his lines, basically, they try to burn Necrodamus. And he does some more immune to fire type stuff. Only for Ghost Rider to appear and scream like, but my flames burn the soul.
Yes.
I love Ghost Rider.
He's just, how do I explain it? You're right, he is literally just everything turned up to 11, isn't he?
Yeah, he's basically, not only does he look like the cover to a heavy metal album.
Yeah.
He's like that heavy metal album come to life.
Oh, can you imagine? Because Ghost Rider is Spirit of Vengeance as well.
Yeah, he is the Spirit of Vengeance.
Well, Marvel's Spirit of Vengeance, and Spectre is DC's Spirit of Vengeance, isn't he?
Oh my god, the two of them together. Like, I think the multiverse would collapse just under all that over-dramatics.
Can you imagine, though, if it was... just going back to my Judge Judy bit with Spectre... But yeah, on one side, but it's actually judge versus judge.
Oh, what if the Spectre's the judge and Ghost Rider's like the bailiff?
Oh my god.
He's like dragging people in with his chains.
Yes, that would so work. That would so work. Yeah, Blade is the prosecution.
Sure, why not? Because I think that's probably another one of my complaints here, is Blade feels a bit periphery. Because, like, especially you get, like, why Hellstrom, Satana, and Ghost Rider are there. Because, you know, this is like heaven and hell. Demons and stuff, and that's their whole bag.
Yeah.
Blade is good at stabbing vampires. It's not really his wheelhouse.
Yep.
Seems to kind of be in the background a lot, stabbing things.
So, hang on, is this the case of everyone else is doing stuff in the foreground and Blade is just in the background killing vampires, going, are you guys done talking? I'm doing all the work here.
It's more the opposite, in that, like, he's the guy at the back yelling, and I'm here too.
Oh, right, so Cyborg then.
He is kind of a bit cyborgy.
Hmm.
But, like, with more personality. Yeah, I'm also not sure how I feel about the art. It's like, I really like David Baldean. Because he does the art in the Domino book at the moment, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But his art, it's also very stylized. Like, it's a very cartoony style. And I think, for the most part, that worked quite well, because, you know, everyone's got very, not necessarily realistic faces, but they're very expressive.
Yeah.
And the action is, you know, it's very fun and fluid. And I love the way he draws Ghost Rider, because he draws him like, it's really skinny and gaunt with like massive hunched up shoulders, just huge plumes of flame.
Nice.
But also because it's quite cartoony, I feel like there's some scenes where it doesn't quite work.
Okay.
Like especially when they're doing kind of the backstory to, you know, how the coins have been infused with like the spirit of Judas's vengeance, where it just feels like it's a bit too bright. Like, you'd want something a bit, you know, darker, more shadowy, more Mike Mignola-esque.
I see, yeah. Hmm.
But I think that's probably more of a niggle.
Yeah.
I think the main issue is just, it's kind of a fun little comic, but then you can put it aside and probably never think of it again.
Okay, cool. I mean, basically what you're saying is, I've forgotten the name. They had that team, you mentioned it earlier.
Oh, the Midnight Suns from the 90s, yes.
Yeah. Is it a decent enough replacement for that?
I mean, I would say so, because look, I'll level with you.
Mm.
A lot of the Midnight Suns, not fantastic.
Yeah, but then...
It's very 90s.
I was about to say, then again, that is basically the 90s through and through, isn't it?
That being said, I think there is one more thing they could have taken from the Midnight Suns and put in this that I think would have pushed me into, like, begrudgingly really liking this book.
Oh.
And that would be Morbius the Euro Trash Vampire.
Yes.
I do love my boy Morbius.
Can you imagine, though, if he literally was like a Euro Trash episode, and so every 5 minutes he stopped and said, look at Lolo, and just cut away to a trampoline.
Look, I'm just saying, in the Spider-Man animated series,
yeah,
he had like a weird mullet and a big black trench coat. You can't get more Euro Trash than that.
This is true. This is very true.
Anyway, that's Spirits of Vengeance. I think it's very much the kind of thing, if you see it on offer somewhere, it's probably worth picking up. But I probably wouldn't necessarily pay full price for it.
Yep. Okay, so finishing things off then this week is me, is it?
It is you, because there's no one else on the show.
Yes. So I have a I've saved the oddest till last, and this is a collected work by Evan Dorkin called Milk and Cheese, Dairy Products Gone Bad. They hate what you hate, and they hate you.
Oh, speaking of Evan Dorkin.
Yeah.
I have a weird conundrum.
Oh?
So you know how Evan Dorkin wrote Beasts of Burden that we absolutely love?
Yeah.
What else he wrote?
What?
Call of Cthulhu.
He didn't write Call of Cthulhu, did he?
He wrote Call of Cthulhu.
Are we talking about the same Evan Dorkin? Because the Evan Dorkin who wrote Milk and Cheese wrote it from 1989 to, was it? From 1999 to 1989 to 2010. Whereas Call of Cthulhu does not read like somebody who's experienced comics for most of the 90s.
Maybe there was a brief period where it got like locked in a cupboard by Bizarro Dorkin.
I'm going to have to find this. Evan Dorkin. Where are we? Comics. Beast of Burden, Dark Horse Presents. I don't see Call of Cthulhu.
I'm sure it was him. I must have just made this up. It was some kind of cheese-based fever dream. Hey, speaking of cheese-based fever dreams, well, quick say things while I search.
Right. So, some of the plaudits for Evan Dorkin's work on Milk and Cheese. According to Patton Oswalt, Milk and Cheese is the cream of the comic crop, a butter bomb of hilarity, and one other lactose-based metaphor. According to Frank Miller, I adore what Evan Dorkin does. I think he's the funniest guy in comics.
Bob.
Yeah?
I was right.
Is it Evan Dorkin?
Yeah. How?
As in Evan Dorkin, born 1965, Evan Dorkin.
Yep, the same Evan Dorkin who did Milk and Cheese.
Really? Evan?
Everyone has an off day, Rob.
The same Evan Dorkin who did Beasts of Burden did Call of Cthulhu.
It's okay, Bob. Everyone's allowed at least one.
Oh, he was just one of the... Oh, no. Yeah, he's one of the authors, isn't he? There's like four authors there.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe he's just put his name on there to help people.
God, you're desperately trying to find any explanation.
I am. I'm trying to because I've got to say, Milk and Cheese, I wouldn't say it's my particular thing, but I have read enough of this type of comic book to actually have a good understanding of it. It's basically... if you think of the old Robert Crumb stuff and things like that, this is kind of the epitome of underground comics, right? And you have Milk and Cheese in various adventures, and they basically go around causing trouble, killing people, doing various things. It's basically a carton of milk and a block of cheese, both of whom are sociopaths, both of whom don't obey the common rules and laws and obey their own whims and desires as they are. Now, they do have some funny moments in this. There are some genuinely funny moments in this, and some laugh-out-loud moments as well. But what you basically have is more an assault on your eyes and your brain as you try and figure out just what the hell is going on. Milk and Cheese is one of those... it's one of those collected works that you don't really want to read all at once. If you do try and read it all at once, you'll probably just end up going a little bit mad and becoming kind of lactose intolerant. I did it. I made the joke.
Oh, was that the joke?
Yes.
He did it, everyone. He made the joke. The joke has been made.
Yes. It's
you
safe
can
to come out
stand down
now.
The guard.
Yes. We can go back to DEFCON 2. So anyway, yeah, Milk and Cheese. It's difficult to explain because, with most underground comics, especially the ones from the 60s and 70s, They were very anarchic. They were very anti-establishment. They basically drew attention to things that were wrong with society and government and the law of the time, but did it in such a way that, you know, that was funny, I suppose, but it was very black humor. And Milk and Cheese is kind of like that. It does kind of hold up a mirror to a lot of kind of 90s America. And that I, you know, being somebody who was an adult during the 90s and actually, you know, we understood a lot about what was going on in America and the rest of the world during that time. Milk and Cheese does reflect a lot of the sensibilities of the time that I remember. And, you know, things that were just plain weird or wrong or things that made you question things. They're in this, but again, it's very busy. It's very, you have so much speech going on in some of them. You basically can't follow what people are saying. It's that old, you know, the complaint that Mick usually has about manga, about speech bubbles everywhere, and you can't follow what they're saying.
Oh, yes,
what?
You can't assign them to any character.
See, I know that's a common complaint that Mick has about manga, but if I give him this, he would just put it down and say, no, I can't do it because I don't know who's saying what.
Actually, that reminds me of another complaint about Planet Hulk.
Oh?
Most of the side characters are red bald aliens, so it can get very confusing as to what character is which.
Yes, the worst thing you can do is not give them names or identifying features. But yeah, it's weird because I get very Cheech and Chong vibes from Milk and Cheese because of how they view the world. Although I have to say Cheech and Chong are a bit more laid back than Milk and Cheese are. Milk and Cheese are very much an assault on your sensibilities, your senses.
Oh, and Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
You're so old, Rob.
It's... What? Am I going to go with Harold and Kumar?
Jeez, to this generation, you don't even know what Harold and Kumar are now.
I don't
know. Am I suddenly old as well, Rob?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Oh, no.
Graham and I decided this on the last episode of The Geek Show. You are officially old as well.
I've been betrayed.
See, this is what happens when you don't listen to the episodes of The Geek Show that we do.
But in my defence, I couldn't be bothered to.
Anyway, Milk and Cheese is definitely one for fans of Evan Dorkin and of the Milk and Cheese comics. And yeah, that's about all I can say about it. It's not really my cup of tea, but I can see... I can understand why people would have such a fan base... Sorry, why this series would have such a fan base, especially given the time it ran for. And it ran for 21 years, so, you know.
That's probably fair enough then.
Yeah. And that's about us, isn't it?
Yeah, but I've basically forgotten how to talk now, so...
Yeah, that's usually a good sign for us to stop the show there. So we're going to stop the show there. That's it from us for this week. We will be back next week with... well, maybe. Are we taking a week off next week?
Yeah, I think we'll take a week off next week.
Okay, so we are taking a week off next week, so Andrew can recover his batteries and also so he can basically just... Well, I have Vinland Saga 10, Andrew.
I'm going to... Okay, to be fair, I am going to need a lengthy refractory period afterwards.
Yeah, so now you know, we'll be off next week, but we'll see you the week after. We'll be back to normal after next week. So until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.